Catholic Media app.
CBS News Special Report. Special Counsel Jack Smith is asking a judge to dismiss two closely watched cases against President-elect Donald Trump. Election interference from 2020 and the classified documents case in Florida. The reason? A sitting president cannot be tried. CBS's Nancy Cordes.
The dismissal says, in part, that prohibition is categorical and does not turn on the gravity of the crimes charged, the strength of the government's proof, or the merits of the prosecution.
CBS News correspondent Scott McFarland reports the move is not unexpected.
What's particularly noteworthy in this filing is Jack Smith says we can't even hold this in abeyance until 2029 and the end of his second and final term. That's too much of a burden on a president. This case must be dismissed, Jack Smith argues.
Smith had already announced he was winding down his efforts and planned to step aside as special counsel. CBS News Special Report, I'm Cammie McCormick.
James here, host of Unlabeled, your 90s mixtape, every Sunday from 8 to 9 on WFHR. It's your weekly dose of music, nostalgia, and pop culture exclusively on locally grown radio.
For WFHR and WIRI News, I'm Melissa Kay. A 68-year-old woman died after a two-vehicle crash in Portage County on Saturday. It happened a little before 1 p.m. on November 23rd in the town of Albin on State Highway 66. A sedan traveling on County Highway I didn't yield from a stop sign before crossing Highway 66. The sedan pulled directly in front of an SUV traveling west on Highway 66. The 68-year-old driver of the sedan died at the scene. The 74-year-old male driver of the SUV and the 78-year-old female passenger were transported by ambulance to the Stevens Point Hospital with minor injuries. The crash remains under investigation. Average gas prices rose 2.2 cents per gallon over the last week. The average in the state today is $2.85. This is 4 cents lower than a month ago and 9 cents per gallon lower than this time last year. Over 30 states have average gas prices below $3 this week, but it won't be nationwide by Thanksgiving. Officials at GasBuddy say Russia's threats after Ukraine used long-range U.S. missiles pushed oil prices back above $70 per barrel. We are seeing the lowest national average price of gasoline since 2021 and a better economic picture than the last time prices were this low. Don't be a victim of holiday scams this season. Lisa Hale has more.
Scams are a global business. Grant Wheat, the Vice President of Risk Management at Verva Credit Union, warns consumers not to become one of the 57,000 people every day taken in by a scam.
If it seems too good to be true, then it probably is, right?
Wheat says holiday scams can come in the form of travel deals, lookalike online stores, and even fake charities.
I'm Melissa Kay for WFHR and WIRI News.
The Packers get some revenge. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports. After losing in the playoffs three times to the 49ers under Matt LaFleur, the Packers beat them at Lambeau Field by a final score of 38-10 yesterday. Was it revenge? Packers quarterback Jordan Love.
It is huge. I mean, we talked about it all week. I mean, just the fact that they knocked us out, and last time we played them, we lost. So we knew it was going to be a four-quarter fight. It feels good to be able to go out there and have a win like this. So, we're going to move past it now. But definitely feels good.
49ers tight end George Kittle.
It felt like they were on the field the entire first and part of the second quarter. So time possession was tough. I feel like that's something that I try to emphasize every single week. Like, hey, what are your goals of victory? Hold on to the ball, run the ball a ton, don't turn the ball over. And I don't think we did any of those three things tonight.
NBA, the Bucks are traveling to Florida. They play the Miami Heat tomorrow night. Tip-off time 6:30. The Bucks beat the Hornets in Milwaukee Saturday night, 125-119. The Bucks are 8-9 and have now won four in a row. With sports, I'm Mike Clemens.
This is your local Civic Media radio station. Want to hear even more? Anytime? Find all of it at civicmedia.us.
Damp and dreary today, with light rain possibly turning into a wintry mix this afternoon. Temperatures tonight crash cold to the teens. And tomorrow, only make it to 30. So as we stay below freezing, at least the sunshine will be out tomorrow. I'm meteorologist Brittany Merlau. It's 33 at our studios.
The excitement.
Oh, he stones Brodzinski with a glove save.
The energy.
What's he going to do? He shoots and he scores.
The tradition.
You've got to understand history if you're ever going to write your own.
It's everything.
He scores. Badgers answer right back.
This is your radio home game for Wisconsin Badger Hockey.
Sponsored by Johnson & Sons Chrysler Jeep, Econ Electric, and 8th Street Auto. Listen on 97.5 FM, 1320 AM, WFHR, streaming live and on the Civic Media app.
Lena Bloom for The Bail Project.
Imagine you're stuck in a jail cell and you can't afford bail, and someone offers you a way out. Just plead guilty and you can go home and kiss your kids goodnight. What do you do? What thousands have. You plead guilty whether you are or not. Cash bail makes poverty a crime. That's why the Bail Project helps those who can't afford it while fighting to end cash bail. Because freedom should be free.
Brought to you by the Ad Council.
Todd Albaugh.
Hey, everybody. Join us next time. Our old friend Luke Mathers stops by for Tuesday Tangents with Luke, and we'll find out what's grinding his gears. Join us then.
The Todd Albaugh Show, weekdays noon till 2.
You're listening to locally grown radio, WFHR, home for Up North News Radio.
Up Wisconsin and beyond. I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to the Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. Got a great show for you all today. I've got a very special friend of mine that's going to be joining us in just a couple of minutes. His name is Bill Whitford. He's been a law professor at the University of Wisconsin for over 35 years. He knows a lot about gerrymandering because he was the named plaintiff in the Wisconsin gerrymandering case that went all the way to the Supreme Court and sort of set some precedent, but didn't all at the same time. We're going to talk to Bill about that. I can't wait to dig into that conversation. But of course, everyone, some breaking news right before we came on air. It seems to be that is the state of play these days. And I'm not talking about one of Donald Trump's shocking cabinet appointments. I'm talking about what I think is surprising to very few and yet deeply disappointing. Jack Smith moving to dismiss the charges against Donald Trump in both the election and documents cases, as I like to call them, the insurrection case and the super secret spy documents case. Again, this happened today. He asked a federal judge in Washington to dismiss the indictment charging President-elect Donald J. Trump with plotting to subvert the 2020 election. And he cited the longstanding Justice Department policy against pursuing prosecutions towards a sitting president. Minutes after that filing in Washington, D.C., Jack Smith made a similar filing to an appeals court in Atlanta, ending his attempts to reverse the dismissal of the other federal case against Donald Trump, that being the super secret spy documents case, dismissed on a legal theory that had been rejected by federal courts many times over, but that which Judge Aileen Cannon, a legal scholar by no stretch, y'all have heard me talk about Aileen Cannon quite a bit. Yes, she dismissed the super secret spy documents case against Mr. Trump. Jack Smith had been appealing that. He is now abandoning that appeal, which is quite fascinating when it comes to what that means for federal precedent relating to the constitutional arguments that Aileen Cannon was persuaded by, that, again, no other federal court, though these arguments have been brought many times, had been persuaded by, in a nutshell, that the special counsel's office itself is unconstitutional. That was certainly, I think, a bit of a shock to most constitutional legal scholars. But of course, you know, Aileen Cannon going her own way. Lots there to unpack. I'm going to save that because I wanted to bring on my special guest. Again, Professor Whitford, Bill, it's a real treat to be sitting here with you many, many years after you and I used to confab up Bascom Hill, just a few, a mile and a half or so from here. How are you, Professor Whitford?
I'm fine, and similarly a pleasure for me to be here.
Yes. So let's just jump right into it. You are the named plaintiff. And to set the stage, back in 2010, we had the decennial census. We've had one subsequently in 2020. We'll have one again in 2030. But after the 2010 census, the Wisconsin government was entirely controlled by Republicans. And so they were able to unilaterally, based on the 2010 census, redraw both state Senate and assembly district lines, as well as congressional lines. And they did so, especially in state government, to basically ensure that Republicans would win and have control of both of those houses of our state legislature for quite some time. They locked it in. As you put it then, Professor Whitford, the legislators chose their voters. Their voters did not choose their elected representatives. How did you view the maps at that time, Professor Whitford, and why did you get involved in this case?
Well, I should say I'm not only a retired law professor, but I'm a longtime political junkie, and I'm a longtime partisan Democrat. So from the partisan Democrat side, they were a total disaster. And
the they here being the redrawn legislative district maps following the 2010 census.
As was demonstrated very clearly in the 2012 elections, where the Democrats won the statewide vote, but the Republicans got close to a two-thirds majority in each.
Yeah, just the exact statistics there from the 2012 election was that despite receiving less than 50% of the vote, Republicans in these statewide races, especially for state assembly, received just shy of 49% of the vote. In the state assembly, they controlled nearly 61% of the assembly seats.
Mm-hmm.
That ain't one person, one vote, is it, Bill?
No, and it was... And there was no reason to expect any change. And so the question became what to do about it. A very good friend of mine who just passed, Fred Kessler from Milwaukee, and also a redistricting expert is sitting in the state legislature at the time, asked me to join a group of other lawyers and partisans. They were discussing that exactly on a weekly, bi-weekly basis in the Watts Tea Room in Milwaukee.
Now a jewelry shop.
Yeah. And we concluded that there was a possible U.S. constitutional claim based on examining the previous precedents, and I won't go into the detail of it, but it was our judgment that Wisconsin had a fact situation that might just persuade Justice Anthony Kennedy.
Who was the swing vote at the time?
Would have been the swing vote.
Yes.
That the U.S. Constitution should put some limits on what I'll call the degree of partisan gerrymandering.
And before this, the Supreme Court had indicated that maybe a gerrymander can be so partisan that it is unconstitutional. They had basically allowed partisan gerrymandering to an extent,
yeah.
Which was, would I be wrong in saying this, Bill, that the degree to which the Supreme Court in the past, prior to your case, and we'll talk about how they've never really solved this problem and won't, that the Supreme Court of the past had basically said, well, we expect there to be a partisan gerrymander to an extent, because in most states they didn't have independent redistricting committees. But that there's some hypothetical fact pattern out there where it'll just be too ridiculous.
Well, they hadn't quite held that there could be a fact pattern too ridiculous to pass constitutional muster, but they'd refused to say that there wasn't a fact pattern. They'd been ambivalent about it.
Ruling in the negative, I see, yes.
And Kennedy had written in those earlier opinions, and based on that, we had some reason to believe that we had the fact situation that might
be that pattern.
Get his vote. So then the next problem became, and we didn't see any other avenue for change in the decade. You know, the Republicans had 60 to 65% majorities. At that time, Scott Walker was governor. But in any event, you weren't going to change the redistricting without having the legislature involved. You weren't going to change it politically, and of course they wouldn't. So the only avenue was this kind of litigation approach, and we decided to try to bring the case and test. It would have set a new U.S. Supreme Court precedent. That's not a small endeavor to bring a case that has to go all the way up to the Supreme Court.
No, and it takes a long time to boot.
Yes, and even then probably win 5-4 at best.
At best, yep.
So the next question became who were going to be the lawyers who were going to put together the case, and that's no small endeavor. It's not just finding some guy down the street who will volunteer his time. We didn't have any money.
Yeah, before we got on air, Professor, you and I were talking a bit about this, and so as to not bury the lead here, though it may seem hard for people to believe, it is challenging to find expert lawyers who will take on cases like this that are willing to go the long mile all the way to the Supreme Court. You got to get expert witnesses. They cost a fortune. It's an expensive endeavor, and it actually can be quite challenging to find highly skilled counsel that are able to bring this kind of case and willing to do it for next to nothing, given that there's all these expenses as
well.
That's
right. So I won't take the time to tell you how we lucked into a kind of hodgepodge ad hoc group of lawyers to bring the case, but we were lucky and the case got filed.
So when we come back, we're going to dig into what exactly the claims that you made, why they're important, but let's just set it up. Again, I'm talking to Professor Bill Whitford, longtime law professor at the University of Wisconsin Law School. By Bill's own recounting, a partisan Democrat, I appreciate the transparency there, and a political junkie. What is gerrymandering, Bill? Let's just start with that baseline.
Well, gerrymandering, we could go into the history of the term, but basically it refers to a kind of manipulation of legislative district lines. In the United States, we have a long-time tradition of having single-member districts, with those districts defined geographically and needing to be, we say, contiguous, that is to say, connected. It is possible to draw those lines in a way that will lead to results that are totally disproportionate to the political views of the political entity here in state. In other words, be undemocratic.
Over or under representation of a particular political party, given the overall political polling or voting patterns of that jurisdiction.
That's right.
Effectively cheating, picking your voters instead of voters picking their legislators because of the way the lines are drawn.
Yeah.
We're going to take care of a little bit of business here, Bill. We're going to come back with University of Law School Professor Bill Whitford. We're talking about the groundbreaking gerrymandering case from Wisconsin that made it all the way to the Supreme Court. You may be wondering, well, what the heck happened after that? Why have I heard more about this? We'll discuss that and so much more. Don't go anywhere. I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to The Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. Join us. You got questions for Bill or I, 855-75-CIVIC. That's 855-752-4842. Keep it locked. I'm telling these tears go and fall away, oh, may the last one burn into flame.
Listening to locally grown radio, WFHR, Rapids' home of Nightlight with Peach Schwabe.
You're an organ donor, right? Here's a tragic fact. Approximately 20 people die each day waiting for precious donated organs. You could make a life-saving decision simply by getting that important dot on your driver's license. That little dot shows those who need to know that you've made a decision to donate organs at a critical time. Go to heroicdeed.com to learn more about the importance of organ donation and how you can make your wishes known. Talk to your family. Get the dot. Save lives. Heroicdeed.com. 97.5 FM WFHR would like to sincerely thank all of the sponsors who have helped keep Pet of the Week on air for all the animals at the Southwood County Humane Society. Thanks to this program, the shelter receives help, the community stays informed, and animals find their forever homes. If you would like to help and be a sponsor of the show, please call 715-496-0710. From everyone at WFHR, thank you for being a part of this great show, Thursdays at 9 a.m.
It's the sound of a soda, considered one of the coolest things made in Wisconsin. Jolly Good has been around since the 1960s. Cryer Foods makes it in Random Lake, which is in Sheboygan County. But Cryer started as a canning company in 1913. What was being canned there? Sauerkraut? Peas? Beets? The answer coming up.
At Jolly Good, we believe in quality.
Soda turned into an important revenue stream when production at the canning company slowed in the colder months. So what was being canned there? Sauerkraut, peas, beets? All three, plus juice, soups, and more. By the 1960s, Cryer quit canning and went all in on Jolly Good soda.
For flavor and value, Jolly Good's got it.
The latest resurgence of Jolly Good makes it a slice of Wisconsin for yesterday and today. I'm Terry Barr for the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to locally grown radio, WFHR.
Everybody, I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to The Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. It's deer season, y'all. I know you've been eagerly awaiting it, including the wives who get to kick their husbands out for a goodly number of days and have the run of the roost, as the old sayings would go, the deer hunting widows. But here on Civic Media, we've got you covered. If you are one of those deer hunters, man or woman, husband or wife, and you want to talk hunting with your fellow hunters, going on his 25th year of hosting this show, Joel Karnack is going to lead our nightly two-hour wooded drive with precision and expertise. It is the Deer Hunters Roundup. You can find it each night during the hunt, from 6 to 8 p.m., except for the Sunday Packer game, of course, and on Thanksgiving Day. You can find this across the network on WCQM, WHSM, WIRI, and, of course, on the Civic Media app. So pop open a cold one, take a bite of your jerky stick, and settle in for the craziest and most unpredictable radio experience that the backwoods can offer. Check it out. Again, that's the Deer Hunters Roundup, starting last week and ending on December 1st. All across the Civic Media Radio Network. Check it out on your Civic Media app. I know I will be taking a listen myself, maybe to just get myself schooled on hunting vernacular. I'm woefully undereducated in that regard. But here to keep you up to date on where gerrymandering sits here in the state of Wisconsin is my very special guest, UW Law Professor Emeritus Bill Woodford. He taught me contracts back in the day, and now he's here to help us understand gerrymandering better. So, Bill, right before the break, we were talking about the idea that in gerrymandering, there is strategic drawing of legislative district lines that effectively lead to a result where it's not one person, one vote, that the overall political leanings of here in this case, the state of Wisconsin, aren't reflected in the election outcomes for state Senate and assembly. Yes. And we were talking about the fact that they do this through two techniques, cracking and packing.
Yes.
Let's start with cracking. What's cracking?
Well, I want to start with both concepts because the goal here is to waste votes of the party that's going to be the minority in the legislature, the disadvantaged party here, the Democrats. And be sure that you waste more votes of Democrats than you waste Republican votes. And that's done through cracking and packing. Cracking means spreading a lot of Democrats in all districts that are going to be predictably won by Republicans. So there's approximately 40% Democrats or 35-40%. That ensures that the Democrats can never win the district, but all those votes are, in a sense, wasted. They don't count in electing a representative. Packing is another technique for wasting votes. You take districts that are safely Democratic and you throw all the Democrats in there that you possibly can. The districts might be 80-90% Democratic. Well, you only need 51% to win the district. So all those Democrats in excess of 51%, all those votes are essentially wasted. They don't help elect a Democrat into the legislature.
So cracking is a way of diluting the voting power of voters that are more likely to vote for Democrats. And that's what happened back in 2010, 2011, 2012, as the Republican legislature was drawing the maps. And packing is to effectively overrepresent votes within a certain district.
Yeah, it dilutes the Democratic votes because it takes them out of all those districts that are about 40% Democrat. That you throw a few more Democrats in and suddenly they could perhaps win that district. So you take them out and you put them in a district that Democrats are going to win anyhow. That's packing.
So, again, Republicans did this to fabulous effect if you're a Republican after the 2010 census.
It was the most technically competent gerrymander
in the history of the country.
Pretty close anyhow. I don't know of a better one. It was technically very proficient.
Very proficient. So what was the core claim that you and your fellow plaintiffs made to challenge the cracking and packing and the dilution of Democratic votes that was executed by the GOP-controlled state government?
Well, we sought to get a constitutional judgment by the Supreme Court that the U.S. Constitution put boundaries on the degree of partisan gerrymandering of single-member legislative districts in the name of one man, one vote kind of thinking.
Yes.
In the name of the thinking that where democracy in the United States means the majority should rule. We have minority rights that are constitutionally protected, but the majority should rule subject to those minority rights.
Yeah, in other words, the majority, on average, over time, you would expect to see able to elect their preferred legislative leaders. And what we saw in the state of Wisconsin following the redistricting in 2010 was that while the state overall preferred Democrats and the series of elections during that decade proved that up, Republicans had near veto-proof majorities, super majorities, in both state houses of the legislature, that being the Senate and the Assembly.
Yes, and I'd say the consequence of a partisan gerrymander is extreme in Wisconsin. It's not just guaranteeing an unrepresentative legislature, but it also discourages partisan energy and partisan activity on the disadvantaged party. And so it becomes much harder for the Democrats to recruit an outstanding candidate for the state assembly. One, because they're not likely to win. Two, even if they do win, they're just a minority in the assembly. And, you know, it's kind of a thankless job to be a minority member in a legislative body that's two-thirds the other party.
I heard these conversations myself, personally, when I was with Democratic Party operatives. We can't get anybody to run in blank, blank, blank district because they know they're going to lose. And even if they can squeak one out, they have no power in state government.
The
job?
That's a consequence of partisan gerrymandering.
We're going to take care of some more business. Come back with UW Law School professor, gerrymandering expert Bill Whitford. We're going to dig into the consequences of that Supreme Court decision or indecision, if you want to put it that way. When we come back right here on the Maggie Dawn Show on the Civic Media Radio Network. Keep it locked.
This is locally grown radio, WFHR. local radio for you and your community. It's Civic Media's mission with stations across Wisconsin. Find your favorites at civicmedia.us.
Well, we've got a little taste of winter around Wisconsin, but what can we expect from here on out? I'm PM Yonke with a quick update on what's happening in food and farming news on a Monday. We'll give you an answer from our state climatologist next.
No one should have to navigate herd health alone. Luckily, you don't have to. A successful operation requires teamwork. Visit bio-vet.com and let us help identify key challenges and offer expert solutions unique to your situation. We evaluate your full herd health plan and make economical recommendations to your operation. Learn more about our team and products for herd health at bio-vet.com.
Innovation.
Steve Vavras is our Wisconsin state climatologist. He's only been on staff for a short period of time, and he's been working ahead to try to come up with a forecast for Wisconsin's winter this year. Hard part, he says, is uncertainty.
The latest forecast or outlook is showing from NOAA, National Weather Service, is no real indication in terms of temperature, whether it will be unusually warm or unusually cold. They're saying equal chances of a warm, cold, or near normal winter. So that doesn't give us much to go by. On the other hand, it is indicating that for the Great Lakes states, including Wisconsin, that chances are elevated for a wet winter. And that's especially true in the eastern half of Wisconsin. That could mean more snow. It could mean more rain. It could mean more rain and snow. It just depends on what the temperatures are like coming up.
So in other words, wait and see. That's Steve Vavras, our Wisconsin state climatologist, with his initial forecast on Wisconsin's winter.
Farming is full of up and downs, but with the right tools, you can navigate any cycle. Join Compeer Financial's Grain Vantage webinar on December 4th from 9 to noon. Hear from ag industry pros like me, Rob Sharkey, during this free virtual event. Leave with real-world strategies to help you manage risk and explore opportunities in today's market. Visit compeer.com/grainvantage to sign up. The Grain Vantage webinar, helping you take control of your farm's financial future.
And pizza giant Domino's recognizes how important production agriculture is and how important agriculture educators are to production agriculture. That's why they've launched a special campaign with the FFA, providing $100,000 in scholarships for college students that are pursuing careers as ag science teachers. They're going to award 10 $10,000 scholarships to high school seniors or college students pursuing that role. Application period is open and will continue until January 9th, 2025. That's a quick look at what's happening in food news on a Monday. I'm Farm Director Pam Yonke.
Your news, conversations, and a whole lot of fun. It's all on your local Civic Media radio station or the Civic Media app.
Damp and dreary today, with light rain possibly turning into a wintry mix this afternoon. Temperatures tonight crash cold to the teens, and tomorrow only make it to 30. So as we stay below freezing, at least the sunshine will be out tomorrow. I'm meteorologist Brittany Merlot. Right now, it's 35.
The Badgers.
Seats Max, face the three, takes the three, left side, yes sir.
Play.
Pivots, fades, flips, good again. Just outside the left elbow.
Here.
Goes up, got it, with the right hand, it counts at a foul.
This is your radio home for Wisconsin Badger basketball.
Brought to you by 8th Street Auto, Econ Electric, and Johnson & Sons Chrysler Jeep. Listen on 97.5 FM, 1320 AM WFHR, streaming live on the Civic Media app.
The Todd Allbaugh Show.
Trevi Olson, senior advisor at the Lincoln Project.
We as individuals need to be far better in terms of getting the tools we need to have the conversations. You're never going to shame someone out of their political beliefs.
Yes.
You're never going
yes.
to get yes. them with talking points.
You nailed it. And I think that that's what some of our friends on the left don't get. And I think it's destructive and it's not beneficial.
The Todd Allbaugh Show. Weekdays, noon till 2 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app. Jane Matinair and Greg Bach.
Coming up on the show, we will be talking about tariffs and the languishing farm bill with Hans Breitenmoser, and we'll wrap it all up with This Shouldn't Be a Thing. I hope you'll join us.
Matinair on air, weekday mornings at 10.
Welcome if you're just joining us. My name is Maggie Dawn, and you're listening to The Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. From local news to what is going on around the state of Wisconsin, Civic Media's mission is to bring you real news and great conversation every single day. I'm having a great conversation this afternoon with UW Law Professor Bill Whitford. If you want to join the conversation with Bill and I, you've got questions about gerrymandering. Where do things stand now? What is the law in all of this? We're going to answer each of those. But if you've got questions, Bill and I will help to answer them. 855-75-CIVIC, 855-752-4842. Comments welcome as well. So, Bill, we are talking about the packing and the cracking, the fact that the maps that came out of the 2010 census here in the state of Wisconsin were potentially the most partisan maps that we have ever seen in the United States, and that it basically diluted or wasted votes of Democrats so that Republicans retained control over state government for many, many years, despite the fact that the majority of Wisconsinites were actually voting for Democrats in their Assembly and Senate races. So y'all brought a lawsuit. You raised equal protection claims under the 14th Amendment. It got all the way up to the Supreme Court. And then what happened? Did the Supreme Court give us some guidance on how partisan is too partisan?
No, I should mention that we won in the lower court, which is called the district court. And
yes.
It was the first time any federal court had declared a state apportionment unconstitutional as excessively partisan. In the Supreme Court, the argument was October 27. They didn't decide it until June 2018. And at that point, they basically sent the case back to the district court on a technicality for more proceedings, which happened. But while those proceedings were going on, another case that raised a similar claim out of North Carolina was decided by the Supreme Court. At that time, Justice Kennedy had retired and he'd been replaced by Brett Kavanaugh. So our key swing vote wasn't there. And Supreme Court decided 5-4 that basically the federal constitution sets no boundaries on the degree of partisanship in legislative apportionment, no regulation of gerrymandering under the U.S. Constitution.
So just to summarize, and correct me if I get any of this wrong, Bill, you have here in the state of Wisconsin, dating from the 2010 census, we had a federal case that finally was filed in 2016. It was heard. It eventually went up to the Supreme Court. And the question before the court was, can you have such an extreme partisan gerrymander with outcomes where less than half of the people are voting for Republicans and yet 60%+ of the seats are going to Republicans, where we have absolutely trashed the principle of one person, one vote? Finally gets all the way to the Supreme Court and they go, technicality, go back down to court. And then the next case they hear on a similar set of issues, they say, the federal constitution says nothing about this. That's, am I getting that basically right?
That's right.
Well, where the heck did that leave Wisconsinites?
Well, we had no option. As I mentioned, we brought the case because there was no political option for getting rid of the gerrymander. We're now in 2018. The Democrats were able to win the governorship, but you couldn't change the legislative representation without an act of the legislature.
Which they weren't going to do.
So basically there was nothing to do. And electing a governor, Tony Evers, was important because he could veto stuff.
Yes.
But he couldn't change the apportionment. What happened next is the 2020 census under those principles we haven't discussed. But after each census, each state is required to reapportion.
Redraw their maps.
To be sure that the populations of each district are more or less the same. And Evers was able to veto the next version of the Republican gerrymander, which was enacted by the legislature. And that sent it to the state Supreme Court to decide what the maps would be during the current decade. State Supreme Court was then controlled famously by four conservatives. And they basically put in place the Republican legislative maps that Evers had vetoed. In a sense, they negated the governor's veto power. So we continued with an apportionment, a partisan apportionment, a little bit different, but not a lot. through the 2022 elections.
So we've now got better-ish maps. We just went through an election cycle. I think a couple of things that jump out to me are these. One is when you see...
Well, we should talk about how we got them. Can
yes.
I do that?
Yes, please, Bill. Go ahead.
So what happened after 2022 is there was a change in the state Supreme Court. There's nothing in the U.S. Constitution decision that prevented a state Supreme Court from right. putting boundaries on the degree of partisanship. And my group held back suing in the state Supreme Court as long as there was that 4-3 Republican majority or conservative majority up there. But then there was the key state Supreme Court election in 2023 that elected Justice Protasiewicz and established a 4-person progressive majority up there. And so we filed that state court case immediately. I wasn't the named plaintiff in the next case, but it went up to state Supreme Court and they decided 4-3 to throw out the maps. They did so not on the grounds that the state constitution establishes constitutional boundaries on the degree of partisanship, but on a technicality. But that threw out the map and they insisted that a new map be fair. And that's the map that the 24 elections...
And that the governor ultimately signed. And that's what we ran this last cycle
that's
with
right.
those maps. Just as a refresher, before the 2020 census, still under the old maps, again, which came from the 2010 census, in 2018, the state assembly races saw 54% of the votes cast in the state of Wisconsin got cast for Democratic assembly candidates. And yet... Republicans maintained their 63-seat, almost veto-proof supermajority, and it hasn't been until this last election cycle. So in 2024 is how long it's taken us, after 2010, to get to fairer maps. Now, with these maps in place, Bill, how do you view the outcome of this last election?
Well, of course, I was disappointed in the presidential result, but it wasn't a disaster for Democrats in Wisconsin. The new maps provide for a great number of contestable state legislative seats, ones that either party could win. In the state Senate, the Democrats, there were 5 such seats out of the 16 races in the state Senate. Democrats won all 5, and the result was... a 4-seat pickup in the state legislature. The margin in state Senate is only half the seats were up, so there was no possibility of getting a Democratic majority, but the margin's down to 18-15, and if Democrats can pick up 2 more seats in 2026 when the other half of the state Senate seats are up, they'll have a majority. In the Assembly, it wasn't as successful. The contestable seats, there were 10 to 12 of them, were split more or less 50-50. And the Democrats picked up 10 seats in the state assembly, but ended up with 45, where it requires 50 for a majority. So we're 5 seats short.
This gets me to what I think is the two most important questions. And the first question is, why should every single voter, no matter what party you may more frequently align with, why should every single voter want less partisan gerrymandering or to have more of an independent redistricting committee approach? Why is this bad, highly partisan gerrymandering? Why is that bad for every voter?
Well, it creates non-majoritarian government or unrepresentative government, as you said. And I say this, the state Supreme Court did not establish a precedent that were boundaries on degree of partisan gerrymandering. In 2030, there's going to be
another census.
A census. In 2031, there's going to be another reapportionment. If the Republicans control everything, as they did in 2011, they'll do another partisan gerrymander. And
the same could be true if it was all Democrats.
That's right. So, you know, big picture, very big picture, a constitutional mistake made really from the founding of the Republic was to leave the question of how to draw district lines to very interested parties
yes.
in the state legislature. it should be taken away from the state legislature to people who will act in a
more neutral way,
more principled, less self-interested way.
It's the ultimate conflict of interest.
Yes.
To draw the legislative boundary lines that you yourself will then run under. Why wouldn't someone, all else being equal, give themselves an advantage, make it easier to win? But the result, as we've been saying, Bill, for every voter, is more extreme government. And we know every time we ask voters, do you want to see more working across the aisle? You want to see more cooperation, more bipartisanship? Voters say, yes, I want more of that. And yet the extreme partisan gerrymander, which neither the U.S. Supreme Court has said they can't weigh in on, and that our state Supreme Court has failed to weigh in on, works to exactly the opposite effect. It makes less accountable elected officials for both Republicans and Democrats.
And it's very consequential. As you may know, there's been a book written about this last decade or so in Wisconsin called The Fall in Wisconsin by Dan Kaufman, a Madison guy, by the way. And it's all about how under Walker and this Republican legislature, they undercut all Wisconsin's, or many of Wisconsin's, progressive traditions.
Well, and even my argument is really much fundamentally very basic. And that is, when you partisan gerrymander at this level, the democratically drawn districts are far more left and the Republican drawn districts are far more right.
That's right. The only election that matters is the primary.
Yes.
The only election that matters is the primary.
And that's for all of us. We keep saying we want our elected officials to work together to get stuff done that works for the great majority of us. And we're setting up a system, a constitutional mistake, as you put it, Bill, that simply metastasizes and repeats this pattern over and over again. I'm going to ask, when we come back, we're going to take care of a little bit of business here, but let's get into this question just a bit, and then we'll continue to talk about it. Are we still vulnerable? We've talked about the fact that the federal Supreme Court won't do anything. The state Supreme Court has yet to do anything. Are we still vulnerable to this extremist political outcomes through this gerrymander after the 2030 census? What do you think, Bill? Are we still vulnerable?
Oh, we are definitely vulnerable. We can hope in the 2030 election the Democrats either win the governorship or a majority in one of the houses. That'll be enough to prevent what's called a trifecta, which is what produces a partisan gerrymander.
And it's not, again, to anyone's best interest, even for the ruby red. If you're a Republican or someone who leans on the conservative edge, you still want a responsive elected official who feels that they need to address your concerns when you give them a call. If they know, gosh darn well, they don't really need to worry about any competition, it makes, even if you're a Republican, your elected representatives less likely to care about what you need.
And we should hope that a lot of the citizens out there believe, and regardless of their partisan inclinations, in the idea of majority government. Isn't that what we were all taught, what the American Revolution was about?
That our systems, our election process should not only work, but that the outcomes should produce a representative government.
That's right.
What a novel concept, it seems, and yet that was the original intent of the founding fathers and
read the
framers.
Read the Declaration of Independence.
Yes, one person, one vote. When we come back, I'm going to talk more with UW law professor about what does this all mean today. How confident is Bill in the rule of law in the country? What does he expect from the next Trump administration? We'll talk about all of that, take some of your comments and thoughts when we come back, right here on the Maggie Dawn Show on the Civic Media Radio Network, 855-75-CIVIC. That's 855-752-4842. Back in just a moment.
You're listening to locally grown radio, WFHR, home for the Todd Allball Show.
Join our advertising family on WFHR and WIRI and see how radio can help improve awareness, revenue, and staffing for your business. I'm Ashley, and it's my mission to help our area businesses thrive. Call me today, 715-496-0710.
Hey there, it's Carrie Joy with your Work Money Minute and an answer to the question, how often should I take my car in to get it serviced?
As somebody who's worked on cars and knows a little bit about them, I admit that my instincts here are 100% wrong. I always want to say, oh, I'll just know when it's time. I'll feel it. But that's pretty hard to make a plan or a budget around. And my husband has made an honest car owner out of me by scheduling our maintenance on the calendar according to the book that everybody has and nobody reads, the manual in your glove compartment. Yep, even the motorheads over at CarTalk.com. Remember that old Car Talk radio show that was one of my favorites, you know, with Click and Clack, the Tappet Brothers? They say that taking your car in on the schedule dictated by the people who made it is the best way to keep it in shape. So grab that manual. And if you want more tips on saving, head over to workmoney.org. Till next time, I'm Carrie Joy saying take good care.
Join the conversation with your favorite hosts or shows anytime. Find and follow Civic Media on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and LinkedIn. Share your thoughts on our social media channels wherever you are, whenever you want. The Civic Media Network of local radio stations here for you.
Are you prepared for an emergency or disaster? Because it's not a matter of if, but when. Don't find yourself saying,
when the storm rolls in, my time to find a pet-friendly evacuation center will have run out.
The scorching heat wave will leave me powerless to cool my insulin.
I'll face a hurricane without meds. Now that's a tough pill to swallow.
Let's prepare so we all have a better story to tell. Get started at ready.gov/olderadults. Brought to you by FEMA and the Ad Council.
Locally grown radio, WFHR.
Happy Monday, everybody. My name is Maggie Dawn. You're listening to The Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. We've been talking gerrymandering with Professor Bill Whitford of the University of Wisconsin Law School. He was one of the named plaintiffs in the gerrymandering lawsuit that came out of the 2010 census redrawn maps here in the state of Wisconsin that went all the way up to the Supreme Court, only to have the Supreme Court not reach the issue and later decide in a subsequent case that they can never decide that there is no federal constitutional remedy for a partisan gerrymander that's just too partisan. Some great questions coming across on YouTube. Chad has been asking us on YouTube, so you like the new maps or you don't like the new maps? What's the problem here? And I want to ask you that question, Professor Whitford, but I'm going to take a crack at it too and then let Bill give you his two cents. I do not like the way that legislative districting, redistricting is done in the state of Wisconsin, period. I don't care who's in control. Partisan gerrymandering is not good for voters, whether Democrats are doing it or Republicans are doing it. I think we need a different system, a system that does not allow the people who stand to benefit from the drawing of the district lines to draw the district lines. It's a complete conflict of interest. What are the solutions that I would propose or like to see? Things like independent redistricting committees that don't permit politicians to be on them, right? To have actual election experts, people who are politically neutral or at least have a political balance, draw those maps, not the people who are about to have to run under those maps. That doesn't make any sense. Here's some other things we could consider. In addition to having an independent redistricting committee, we could hope that our state's Supreme Court actually defines what are the factors that would indicate that a gerrymander is far too partisan and has therefore violated the state constitution. We could look at moving away from single member legislative districts so that you could have either multi-member districts or just statewide proportional representation. What I'd like are election outcomes that fairly reflect the overall viewpoints of Wisconsinites. That's what I want. Again, I don't care if partisan gerrymandering is being done by Democrats or Republicans. I don't think it's a good way to draw legislative districts. Bill, your thoughts. What is the state of play? What should our objectives be?
Well, to go to Chad's question, obviously the maps now are pretty fair, and they were technically enacted by the legislature and signed by Evers, but they were legislatively produced, in other words, but under a threat by the U.S. by the Wisconsin Supreme Court that they would only accept fair maps, and so the legislature decided to propose these maps rather than wait for the court to draft its own maps. I don't expect the legislature would have enacted these maps except under that kind of pressure from the state Supreme Court. And absent the Supreme Court's involvement, which was this time on a kind of technicality, I expect the Republican legislature to enact another partisan gerrymander.
And again, I don't think that helps Republican citizens who want responsive government. I don't think it helps Democratic-leaning citizens who also want responsive government. Let's step back here at the 100,000-foot level, Bill. We got a second Trump administration coming up. What do you anticipate from that administration at a really high level? What concerns do you have? And where do you think sort of the rule of law stands right now in the United States?
Well, I have so many concerns. We could go on well into the evening, but sticking to the rule of law, the kind of prompt, Trump has exhibited or stated various authoritarian leanings. It's talked about he's going to be a dictator for a day and stuff like that. To me, the phrase rule of law, which everybody says is good, it's like saying you're for democracy or so forth. the rule of law, the basic idea behind it is that all governmental decisions should be accountable to some other body as not too inconsistent with some kind of principle. What the objection is to having no accountability in decision making. Elections are, of course, a big source of accountability, but elections don't work very well in a gerrymandered environment. And the other big source of accountability in the American system are the courts, which interpret the U.S. Constitution, are considered to have final authority. But the courts have become widely perceived to be, and I think fairly much more partisan than they were previously, and hence less proficient at providing that accountability. So on the rule of law, that's my concern.
We're hearing a little bit of echo.
So I'm going to keep on going.
So you have been hearing from Bill Whitford, University of Wisconsin Law School professor, self-proclaimed partisan. We've been talking about the gerrymander maps. And Bill, I just want to lift up the points that you just made. I asked Bill, what are your great concerns about the next Trump administration and as that relates to the rule of law? And he pointed out what I think every single American, every Wisconsinite wants, and that is elected officials that are accountable. And one key source of that accountability is, of course, the courts themselves. To the extent that we've all lost faith in our court system, that weakens our ability to hold elected officials accountable. And certainly at the end of the day, the thing that I am very concerned about that sort of is the outgrowth of what you just laid out, Bill, is that corruption becomes much more likely as accountability goes down. And I don't care if it's a Republican that's corrupt or a Democrat that's corrupt. Corruption in our government is a government that's failing to serve the needs of all of us. Bill, thanks so much for your time. It was a real pleasure to see you, sir. I hope we can do this again sometime.
Well, that'd be nice, Maggie. Thank you for having me.
Thank you, sir. We're going to come right back after your news, weather, and sports. I've got a great guest. Her name's Andrea Dukas. We're going to talk about the impact of RFK's appointment as DHHS director.
You're listening to locally grown radio, WFHR, home for Up North News Radio.
Todd Albaugh.
Hey, everybody, join us next time. Our old friend Luke Mathers stops by for Tuesday Tangents with Luke, and we'll find out what's grinding his gears. Join us then.
The Todd Albaugh Show, weekdays noon till 2.
Hey, everybody, glad you could join us. I'm Tim Hubbelt, better known as the Polka Guy, on the Sunshine Polka Party Variety Show.
Join Tim every Saturday and Sunday for a great variety of polkas, waltzes, and more. Wake up at 7 a.m. on Saturday morning to get the weekend started on the right foot, then enjoy a lively Sunday afternoon at 1 p.m. Same great show, two different times, one fun weekend. The Sunshine Polka Party Variety Show, 7 a.m. Saturdays and 1 p.m. Sundays, only on WFHR, locally grown radio.
This is your hometown radio, refreshed.
keeping you informed, entertained, and connected locally across the Civic Media Network. This is Locally Grown Radio.
WFHR 1320 AM. W248DE Wisconsin Rapids.
And always streaming on the Civic Media app.
CBS.